While you were away, there was something I forgot to tell you.
What?
So, you know how I sent you and Mel the video of the big reveal at my brother and my sister-in-law's gender reveal party? After I cut off the video, I pulled a Dumbledore.
You fell to the ground dead?
No, I didn't fall to the ground dead.
Oh,
No,
okay.
see, you know how
Just
people
guessing.
have different well, you know how people have different ways of doing this, and apparently gender reveal parties in general are a huge American thing. Marjolin apparently doesn't get why Americans do it, and I told her Americans have to make everything into a thing. That's the American way. But
Yeah.
what they decided to do was, before the big reveal at the party yesterday, they had wristbands and bead necklaces in blue and pink that everybody could wear based on whether they thought it would be a boy or a girl. I had a feeling it was actually going to be a girl. So I had, pink beads and a wristband, but I had a blue necklace in my pocket. And when they did the big moment
You
and they
switched
revealed the
over,
blue
Luke.
confetti, I reached into my pocket and I said, "Well, it looks like we need a little change of decoration." Ha ha! Ah, me!
And no one was the wiser.
Oh, yeah, nobody, definitely nobody noticed, but I don't think I was the only one that did that.
That's pretty funny.
Welcome to Into the Fold, a show where two best friends share their love of Leigh Bardugo's Grishaverse chapter by chapter. I'm Jeff.
And I'm Juliana, and this week we are discussing chapters 17 and 18 of Siege and Storm. And welcome, listeners. We're excited that you're here to join us on this journey into what I will say is one of the most enraging chapters for me in the entirety of these books. Didn't know when we were going to get to it, and we did. Wow. Are you in for a treat today? Hi.
I wonder why that could possibly be. Anybody who's been with us for a bit now could probably guess what could possibly come up in these chapters that would enrage you so much. But for
What a
anybody who's
mystery.
just getting to know us now,
You're probably in
trust
for a
me,
treat.
it's going to become a mood. It's going to become a vibe. It's going to
Oh.
become a thing. However you want to think of it, this is something that just it keeps happening. And I'll admit this to you. There are a lot of people who listen to our show who probably think that I am a Mal Oritsev stan, and I don't know if I would go that far. I just feel like it's a more entertaining conversation if I present you with enough counter arguments for your opinions on Mal that you will either just keep blowing up until you literally catch fire, or you will eventually have to admit that he's not as bad as you say he is.
Well, I mean, the latter, Jeff, I don't think I'm ever going to do,
No,
especially
you
given
are
these
much more
chapters.
likely to spontaneously combust than you ever are to admit that there is anything even slightly redeeming about Mal.
Yeah, I mean, if anything, these chapters go on to prove that excessively, and I don't think he has any feet to stand on or legs to lean on or stubs to even hobble on after this.
See, that's where I have the problem, is that you keep saying it definitively proves things. It proves that you believe what you believe and you have
Yeah.
reasonable arguments,
Yeah.
but it doesn't definitively prove anything any more than any counters that I offer you definitively prove anything. That's the point. These things can't be proven. It's what people think.
Listeners, we put this out to the jury. You leave us with a ruling here at the end of this episode and let us know which side you stand on.
Don't tell the listeners what to do. They didn't ask to be part of our wacky legal system that we just invented.
I mean, they have the choice. I didn't send out any declarations or letters in the mail telling them that they had to be part of this jury or they would get a fine or sent to jail. So
Only because you don't have their addresses. If you had the addresses of every listener that we have, then trust me, you would be sending them friendship letters because that's how we started. And you have lovely parchment paper. I've seen it.
Yeah, honestly, you're right. It wouldn't be anything rude or mean. It would literally just be friendship bracelets and stickers and lots of love letters in the mail. It wouldn't be anything.
I'm glad you brought up stickers because I've been meaning to tell you something, and this feels like the appropriate avenue to communicate this information.
Okay.
So you sent me several stickers recently, and one of them was a sticker that I think you designed yourself, because as regular listeners will know, you refer to Mal as a douche canoe.
I did design a special sticker just for you, Jeffrey.
Yes, you designed me a sticker that says dush.
Did I spell it wrong?
You did spell it wrong, but you know what? I love it more because it is not correctly spelled. Because that makes it even more unique. Because if that douche canoe thing were to ever catch on and other people were to make stickers,
they
would probably... Yeah, I mean, people would probably do it all different kinds of ways. But this way, I'm always going to know every time I look at this canoe that says dush, that is definitely designed by my friend Juliana.
That is also sparkly pink, too.
It is sparkly and pink. I feel like that was for me.
That was specifically for you. And maybe the Darkling, too, because I feel like those are within his color palette as well.
Being an Ariana Grande super fan, as we have decided on this show that he is, yes, he would definitely have pink and sparkly.
Yeah, but that was definitely a choice for you as well, Jeff. But maybe if you want, you can take a picture of it wherever you have it displayed, and we'll post it on our social media so that way people can fully enjoy the Douche Canoe.
Oh, sure. Yeah, definitely. Sticker. But before we get into our chapter discussions for today, we do have a little bit of news from the front, and we're going to talk about it. Woo! News! News. All right, so the first thing we have coming up in our news today is going to come from me. I don't know if we ever actually said this or not, but when we set up the show, Juliana has been running our Instagram account, and I've been running our Twitter account. But here's the thing. I got a new phone. I got logged out of everything. I thought I got logged back into everything, but I didn't. And I neglected to notice that I didn't have access to our own Twitter account. But when I went back and I looked at it, I saw that it seems like for the most part, our audience is interacting with us through Instagram. So we have decided to discontinue our Twitter account.
Yeah. So listeners, if you're looking to find us on Twitter, you can find an inactive Twitter account there. There's nothing new that's going to be posted just because, like Jeff said, we don't really get any interaction on the Twitter, but we do actually get a good amount of interaction over on Instagram. So thank you to everyone who has interacted with us over on Instagram. And I guess if you would like to get in contact with us going forward, the main ways to do so are the Instagram, which is Into the Fold Pod on Instagram. And you can also send us an email at intothefoldpod@gmail.com. So those are the two main ways to get in contact with us if you want to share any of your hot takes or pieces of Canadian bacon with us. That is the way to go.
There you go. Yeah. Now, there have been a small number of people who have interacted with our Twitter over the last couple of months. So at first, I want to say thank you to you guys. That has been fun. But it's just that we don't get a whole lot of traffic on the Twitter. So we have just decided to focus more energy on the more active area of our social media. So we're going to be doing that from now on. Yeah. And now, Juliana, what else is going on in the news?
Oh, some very exciting things, Jeff, which I am kind of jealous of because this is actually happening when I'm going to be in Chicago. But Leigh Bardugo is actually going to be going to New York City Comic Con this year as a guest, which is very exciting. She will be there able to do signings and pictures with people. I believe that her sign up is either just about to be open or just opened, where you can sign up for slots with her to get a signature and a picture, which is how they are doing it, which is, I believe, how they normally do it at the major Comic Cons. You have to sign up ahead of time to meet these people. But she said on her Instagram post, "Welcome to the Grishaverse New York City Comic Con. Join me on the con October 7th through 8th, when Juliana will not be able to drive down to New York City to see Leigh Bardugo because she won't be in the area. I'll be chatting on panels, signing your books, and answering all your Grishaverse and Ninth House questions. We'll also have some very fancy Grishaverse merch for up for grabs. Tickets go on sale Sunday, March 22nd at 10 a.m. Eastern. See you. Set your heist clock.
That would be Sunday, May 22nd, though, right?
Yeah, sorry. Sunday, May 22nd, yes. That is when the tickets are going on sale for the meet and greets with her. So when this episode comes out, you will have, like, 3 days before that happens.
And speaking of merchandise, if anybody's interested in getting some Grishaverse stuff ahead of time, if you go to Leigh Bardugo's website and click on merchandise, I believe that will take you to thehall.com/... Gosh, that's a lot of words, so I'm not going to read them out loud here. But there is some exciting Grishaverse merchandise that is available if you would like to get your hands on some now. And if you would like to get some Grishaverse merchandise while supporting this show, our Etsy shop is still open. We've got pins, stickers, and Juliana will make you a handmade kefta with your choice of colors.
And glitter.
And glitter. Glitter is essential.
Essential. And that's Grishaverse, Grisha Trading Post on Etsy. That's the name of our shop. Or you can just head over to our link tree on Instagram, and the link is right there. So that's probably the easiest way to find us if you're
there. You go.
Interested in some of our merch. And we also have one more little piece of general news, and that is that the Fierce Reads Company is putting on a Grishaverse fan contest, which is very exciting. So they are celebrating the Grishaverse in a big way, and they want to give you a chance to win a magical trip to an event in LA. And all you have to do is submit a photo or video that shows how much you love all things Grisha. And they said ideas include cosplay, Bookstagram posts, fan art, or anything that celebrates the Grishaverse. They're going to be sharing more details with us as the event comes around. And the event actually, as of this coming out, has just ended on the 16th. So,
this episode comes out on the 12th.
Okay. So, you still have a few days then. This episode's coming out on the 12th, and the contest ends on the 16th, so you still have a few days to send your photos and pictures and anything Grishaverse over to them. So head on over to @FierceReads on Instagram for the most updated information. But if you're a huge Grishaverse fan and you also do cosplay or something like that, this is a great way to utilize the stuff that you've already created to possibly win like an awesome trip. So could be worth it. Might as well try, you know.
What do you have to lose?
Hey, why not? Give it a go.
Yeah, give it a go. And if you win that contest and you want to share anything about your experience going there, let us know that too. We would love to see that. If you're going to this Comic-Con event to meet Leigh Bardugo, if you win the contest and you go to the opposite coast in LA, either way, if you're doing anything Grishaverse related, feel free to reach out and let us know about it, because we would love to hear about it.
Yeah.
And speaking of hearing about things, it's time for us to listen to the voice of the people. So we got an email from one of our listeners. This is from Anna, and this has a correction for us as well as a very interesting theory. So Anna says, I, as a neurodivergent person, high-functioning autism is my diagnosis, but I prefer to be called neurodivergent, I feel obligated to correct you on your most recent episode. Asperger is not the PC term. Now we call it high-functioning autism. However, I also read David as autistic. I like all of the diversity Lee has in her book, but I would really like her to confirm it. Even if it's just in an interview or a social media post, I feel a lot of authors and writers in general who code characters as neurodivergent shy away from stating it outright, especially for autism, and it's a little hurtful. Perhaps she has said something and I'm just not aware of it. I've been thinking a lot about Grisha Steele lately, and I think you'd find my theory interesting. I believe Grisha Steele is forged using the remaining bones from amplifiers. Using bone as a fuel for the forge imbues the steel with carbon, making the blade stronger and less brittle. Vikings believed this was due to magic, but it's actually science. And we know Grisha don't use magic, they use the small science. The only reason I say they use amplifiers as the source of bone is perhaps because the power of the amplifier adds some other properties as well. It may also be to make me feel a little better. I don't like that they just kill the animal for power, and on top of that, they only use a small portion. It's wasteful. I'm curious to see if you believe this theory has any merit, or if you have a different one. Most ardently, Anna.
Yeah, so first off, I'd like to apologize for... It was me who said that David was Asperger's, so the correct term was high-functioning autism. So I do apologize for that, and thank you for Anna for pointing that out, for correcting us. And listeners, if we ever do anything like that, just let us know. We're happy to correct ourselves. We'd rather be learning.
I was unaware also that Asperger's was no longer considered politically correct. I don't use it only because I was never able to distinguish between, different diagnoses. I know that that's, I believe, part of why the term neurodivergent has become so much more acceptable, because it is just something people are a little bit more comfortable using. So I'm also grateful to Anna for reaching out and educating us on that. And I feel like she makes a very interesting point about how Leigh Bardugo hasn't exactly confirmed, yes, David is neurodivergent, or possibly even that Nikolai could be neurodivergent, and how a lot of authors don't just state these things outright. But I actually agree with that opinion. I feel like it would be good positive representation to be able to explain that. I think possibly one of the reasons why some authors might not is because they write the character that way, but then they know if they say outright, yes, I wrote this character this way, then they're going to get grilled on whether or not they have any particular expertise with certain diagnoses and how they were able to adapt them for literature, and they just, maybe they aren't prepared to field those kind of questions.
Yeah.
Like, they felt like they knew enough, or they recognized enough of a person's neurodivergency, because maybe they know somebody in their own life who's like that. And so they could even be basing some of these characters on their experience dealing with real people. And maybe they just feel like they can't speak to certain topics with expertise. But I think you could respectfully explain that to people if you got those kind of questions.
Yeah, no, I agree. And I think it would be nice to, if not just Lee and other, but other authors as well, to kind of identified the neurodivergency and made it less taboo to, like, state, like, these things. Not that they're bad things to have, but just, like, matter-of-factly being like, oh yeah, David has high-functioning autism, and that's good. He's very good at what he does, and so that really plays into him as a character and plays up the skills that he has. So I think that it can be done in a way that is tasteful and also is respectful. But I think you're right, Jeff, too, where you really toy that line of people coming after you, because we all know people love to go after, like, authors and other people and just people in general.
Well, on the one hand, you can't just write characters who are exactly like you all the time, because an author has license to write about characters who are different from them. In fact, a lot of times, that's how you grow to understand people who are different from you.
Mm-hmm.
You get to know them, you understand them, you appreciate them, and then you try to provide an avenue for representation in your work. And I think when it's done that way, it's a beautiful thing. It's when it borders on exploitation that it starts to really become a serious issue. And I think people are afraid of being accused of exploitation. So when it comes to things like this, or if you're maybe a heterosexual person who wants to write queer characters, I think a lot of times people are going to come out and say, well, I don't think that your representation of this community was helpful. In fact, I think it was hurtful, and here's the reasons why. And if they say things like that, their opinions may be perfectly valid. And that's something else to bear in mind, is that you cannot please everybody.
Yeah.
If a person who does not identify personally with a certain community tries to provide representation of that community in their work, there is likely somebody who is going to be happy about it and somebody who is going to be unhappy about it. And there are some times where you just are not going to be able to please everybody.
I feel like for every one person who is happy that David was not, like, outrightly stated as neurodivergent, there's another person who's mad that he wasn't. So I feel like it's just, it kind of depends on where you are in your life journey, how you feel about things. And you're right, Jeff, you're never going to please everyone. So
And it's okay. Just as long as you, in your heart, feel that you have done right by whoever you need to do right by, and you have done your best, and you can be at peace with that, then you've done what you can do, and you are not accountable for other people. Now, this idea about using amplifiers to forge into Grecia's steel...
Yeah, something that never occurred to me in any capacity. I never thought of this at all.
It's a very fascinating notion. And what it brings to mind for me is that in order to really make a defense for certain headcanons, you have to have certain information that you're not party to. Like, first of all, I agree wholeheartedly with this idea about not liking killing animals just to get the amplifiers. We've talked about this a lot on the show,
like,
and
that.
We know that our friend Mel is on board with this as well.
Not Mel.
Mel. If the animal happens to die of natural causes after living a full life, and then you retrieve the materials to make the amplifier, fine. It could even be seen by some, depending on the purpose and intended use, of a way of making sure that the spirit and the power of that animal lives on. That could be a beautiful way of looking at it.
Yeah.
But as far as killing the animal to get the amplifier, no, not on board with that.
Yeah, I agree
with you. As for using the amplifiers in Grecia's steel, I wouldn't say I disagree with the theory. I would say I have a doubt about the theory that I can't get past, just because my logic brain kicks in here. And what I'm thinking is... Oh, I have a logic brain. Yes.
Where have you been hiding it?
Usually in a cabinet drawer. I keep it locked away.
Oh, that's why I've never seen it. I've only seen Crazy Brain.
Yeah, you've only ever seen Sparkle Brain.
Yeah.
I put on Sparkle Brain most of the time when we do stuff together.
Oh, okay.
Now, as far as this, here's what I see. I would need to know, how many amplifiers have there been? How much Grecia steel has been made? And is there enough material from ground up amplifiers to put into Grecia steel? Is it still possible to make Grecia steel without ground up amplifier material? And if you do it that way, is it still considered Grecia steel?
Well, plus you'd have to know exactly how much amplifier to Grecia steel, what the ratio is. Because if you only need like a few sprinkles of the amplifier, whatever it may be, like say we have the stag and Alina has the collar, and that's the thing that we've taken from the stag, but you have a whole full rest of a stag, like it's huge. But if you only need like a teeny tiny little like sprinkle of the stag's ashes to like make the... Grecia steel, you could make that stag go for a really, really long time.
See, I'm glad that you're the one who said that, because you're the material guy here, and I feel like those are things material guy would have to think about. I think what they're saying is not you take everything else from the animal and use it to make Grecia steel. Like, take the stag, for instance. With the stag, the amplifier was the antlers.
Yeah, so you take the
That's what becomes the amplifier. But what about the rest of the stag's bones? Did they have just as much power? And could you use those?
Yeah, we don't know that.
And that's the thing about headcanon, is that you can explain it in a way that makes sense. And I think there is some merit to their theory. It's just that Anna's theory about using amplifier ground up into Grecia steel has a lot of questions that people would... If people want to weigh in on that, if people want to just, I mean, I'm not great at math, I'm not great at science, but I appreciate people who are. So if anybody wants to take a minute and try to sketch out
the process.
Yeah, how much of a ratio of ground up amplifier per Grecia steel piece would be needed in order to make this theory work? I think it could be done. It would be a real thinker.
Yeah, someone's just going to have someone who has a lot of time in their hands. Let us know. Flesh it out. Maybe make some Grecia steel yourself if you happen to have an extra amplifier just kind of laying around somewhere, you know. Test it out.
Oh, yeah, because people can do that for sure.
I mean, like, I don't know people's lives. I don't know the lives they live, Jeff. It's not my job to tell them how to live their life. Unless it's Mal, then it's my job to tell him how to live his life because he doesn't know how to use his own brain.
Oh, bother.
Okay, so before we get down to the Mal roast fest that are these chapters, we have two more things left on our Voice of the People. The first one is our updated Grisha tally, which I am very, very excited to announce that we officially have another material guy, and that is our friend Anna from just a few seconds ago, and they are a fabricator. So the tally right now is Ethereal Kai 18, Corporeal Kai 11, and Material Kai now 6. I mean, yes, we are still last, but we added to our tally this week, and that's all that counts.
And that puts us at 33.
Yeah.
33 total Grisha on the tally. So we are slowly approaching second army numbers.
Yeah.
Because in the last couple of chapters, we have figured out that Alina is working with about 50 Grisha here. Mm-hmm. And we ourselves have got 33 Grisha in our tally. So if we get 17 more people who listen to the show to weigh in and add themselves to our tally, then we will have 50 Grisha. Oh, yeah. We will have a second army.
Wow. And I can tell you what, Jeff, just from knowing what the numbers are on this podcast, thank you very much. We have more than 50 people who listen to this podcast. Thank you very, very much. So if you're listening, let us know what you are, because I know you're out there somewhere. Hi.
All right, so now let's get into our chapter discussion, starting with chapter 17, titled, just kidding, these chapters don't have titles. All right, so what's going on in chapter 17?
Okay, so we are starting off, and it is summer. And as the summer continues on, we have the daily Grisha councils that Alina has started and has kept putting on, and it's just, there's a lot happening in these councils, just a lot of discussion of things, and just everyone is arguing about stuff. But things seem to be getting done, so that's a good thing.
Well, kind of. Some of the meetings, apparently, they last just a couple of minutes, and some of the meetings last hours. Mm-hmm. So it just, I guess it's if anything is happening or if anybody expresses any hard opinions that people feel like need to be debated. My takeaway from these council meetings is that it's nice to see that Paja, the fabricator that we've met in the last couple of chapters, who's also assigned to be part of the council, she actually likes getting out of the lab and doing something other than just tinkering. So it's nice to know that not all fabricators are adhering to the stereotype of, oh, I'm just going to hunker down in the lab.
Yeah, it's definitely nice in this chapter specifically, the amount of fabricator representation that we get and just the uptick in how they are treated more like human beings and less like pieces of dirt that were kept on the side of the plot line for everything up until now. So it's definitely nice to feel appreciated.
Yeah, that's been one of the upsides to only having so many Grisha to work with, is that now they've started to realize they've been underestimating the fabricators, and they're leaning really heavily on them because they're making all these gadgets. David is still working on these huge dishes that are supposed to magnify Alina's powers even more. But that's not all. They're working on other stuff, too.
Yeah, we have them working on, like, exploding powder, but it can't actually, like, explode and level the field because then it will blow them up too. So they're trying to do like a flashing powder and things like that and figure out ways to power items. And it's very fun to see the different orders of the Grisha interacting and working with each other, which is definitely what Alina set out to do in the last couple of chapters when she was setting this all up. And it's nice to see some of that playing out and just the teamwork and the camaraderie that's happening.
Now, the steel skin infusions that they talk about, I don't know how I'd feel about that.
I signed up for scientific studies before, but that's not the one I'm putting my name on for. So they can find another test subject somewhere else, but I think I'm really okay. I think I'm good on that one, you know?
Why does this feel like something that, like, maybe years and years after the apocalypse happens and they're trying to look through old records of what the world used to be like to figure out how we got here, they're going to find old records that says that the military was experimenting, like they hired all these wacky cosmetic surgeons to try to infuse soldiers' skin with actual steel so that they wouldn't have to put on armor at a moment's notice?
I mean, didn't, like, Nazi Germany try and do that, pretty much?
I don't know. They might have. The Soviet Union did all kinds of experiments to try to strengthen themselves up. I mean, that's what you hear about back then, is that the top scientists who worked in every government of all these countries that were at war were putting money into research and development for things that now just seem completely bonkers. So I guess this is their version of that.
Yeah.
Then again, Grisha can withstand. Grisha power seems to make them able to withstand some things that other people can't. So maybe that's the difference. Maybe they can handle it.
Could be. And they have Korporakai on staff that seem to be able to heal people pretty easily. So that's another factor, too.
Well, thank goodness for that.
Yeah, there's a lot more drawn out of a healing process if you're just in Okazatsuya like you and I, Mel. Mel. Wow, I called you Mel. Wow, I'm losing it, Jeff. I am, like, far beyond gone. I just called you Mel.
This isn't that show. This is the other show that you're on.
I know.
This is Into the Fold. It's a show where two best friends, you and me, share their love of Leigh Bardugo's Grishaverse chapter by chapter. This is not your Harry Potter happy place. Although I do love that show. When they talk about stuff during... Back to these council meetings for a second. They're talking about, like, is the Darkling going to come through Fierda or the Shu Han in order to get to them? And I can't help but wonder, what's it going to take for him to do either? Because he can't just attack them head on. He's going to have to sneak into a rival country and then somehow get back here. Doesn't that sound more complicated to you?
Yeah. I mean, to me, it feels like, just reading these chapters, that the Darkling's going to find some other route that they're not thinking of, just because he's such a crafty person. And he seems to be able to utilize different forms of the small science that other people can't seem to access. So to me, I was hearing them argue about which way he was going to come through to Ravka, and I was thinking in my head, he's probably just going to make his own path some other way. Knowing him,
it would make sense to me that in order to actually infiltrate Ravka from either Fierda or the Shu Han, he's gonna have to make a devil's deal with one of them.
Yeah, that's true.
So that they can team up and then he can double cross them, because that's the kind of shady stuff that the Darkling would do. To me, it makes most sense to go with the Shu Han, only because at this point in the series, we don't know that much about either yet.
Yeah.
But we do know that in Fierda, they consider Grisha to be unholy abominations. And in the Shu Han, they consider them to be objects of fascination. So that would make more sense to me. You go to the Shu Han, the Darkling makes a deal that he can, if he helps them infiltrate Ravka and get the rest of the Grisha, he'll hand over as many Grisha as they want to do experiments with, and then the Shu Han will give them entry.
Yeah.
That's the only way that makes sense to me.
Yeah, no, that's true. That makes sense. I can get behind that. And one of the other questions we get from this council is the question of, do we think the Fold is going to exist? If and when? Because they have a definitive answer, I think, from Paja, who says, when we destroy the Darkling. And everyone at, well, Alina is like, oh my goodness, wow. She's actually having a positive attitude. How wow. And they ask if we think the Fold will survive beyond the Darkling, which I think is a very good question, actually. Do we think that the Fold, after the Darkling is destroyed potentially, because we don't know what's going to happen, do we think the Fold will go on existing?
I think it just makes sense to me that it would not exist, because since it came from him, it's connected to him. It makes sense to me that once he's destroyed, the Fold would no longer be able to exist. Now, he doesn't have to be in the Fold in order for it to continue. He doesn't have to regularly visit the Fold in order to replenish it, and yet it came from him. So if he is destroyed, I think the Fold probably would crumble. But my question is, if it does come down to that, then would East and West Ravka be able to just reunite and become one country? Because they've been separated for a long time, and West Ravka definitely got the more raw end of this deal. Because East Ravka is where everything is still happening. It's where the Darkling and everyone else in Ravka that's super important is headquartered. It's too dangerous to cross the Fold. So West Ravka gets super duper screwed.
Yeah, I guess I think it would just depend on the politics between the two countries, because as of right now, they're pretty much separate countries.
Yeah, it would just come down to whether or not they would be able to reunite. I know that, I'll tell you this, mm-hmm. East Ravka would have to do a lot to make amends with West Ravka, because once that fold comes a tumbling down, and I'm guessing that by that point, whatever it would take to destroy the Darkling would leave East Ravka in an even more desperate situation than they're in now. So in order for them to bring down the fold, they would probably have to make a lot of sacrifices and a lot of hard fighting that would leave them incredibly vulnerable. And then West Ravka would actually be the ones to have to make the difficult decision. Do we march on them, continue this war, and become the dominant power in the new Ravka, or do we cooperate?
Yeah, I mean, I don't know the politics of both of those countries super well and how they interact directly with each other. So I think it would just be something I think we'll have to wait and see, Jeff. That is kind of a wait and see moment. We'll see, one, if the fold gets destroyed, if and when possibly the Darkling gets destroyed. Because two, we have to see if the Darkling gets destroyed. And three, we have to figure out where in God's name the Darkling is, because they have no idea where he even is right now. So we're all kind of waiting on that. And it's interesting because Alina, she's the girl of meetings. She is like the queen of the meetings right now. She is going to these Grisha council meetings, it seems like in the mornings and then the afternoons. She's heading off to way too many meetings with all of the other council members of the, like, Okazatsiya court. And it's just, I would hate this so much. Oh my god, I would hate it. I do not envy her in any capacity.
It's hilarious, because you assume, and everyone else does too, that Alina is going to struggle with the leadership aspect of leading the Second Army, but what she's actually struggling with is keeping a calendar.
Yeah.
Because we don't know how they handle time here. We don't see clocks. We don't know what the dates are. People are not writing down when they are. People are just writing down what season of the year it is. It's like Game of Thrones.
Yeah, it's the 50th day in the spring of the 20th year of our Lord.
See, even that would be more of a date than we're actually getting now.
Yeah. It probably is very challenging, and I definitely do not envy her in any capacity at all.
Well, while Alina is struggling with that, Nikolai is playing kind of an interesting game. But then again, I can't remember. Have they said that Nikolai is a gambler? He clearly gambles with strategy and with his own life, but I don't know, like, does he gamble at, like, casinos?
I feel like we've had him mention that he's gambled money at some point, like, or some kind of item. And he definitely is someone who I would not be super surprised in any capacity if he put money on something.
Fair enough. Because he's playing a very interesting game with Vasily. Mm-hmm. Because Nikolai's going to all of, speaking of the meetings, yes. Nikolai is going to the meetings, which yes. means Vasily only starts going to the meetings because he's super duper jelly that Nikolai is better at this than him. And Nikolai is encouraging Vasily to come to these meetings because he makes long, dry speeches about patriotism. He offers up nothing useful. And Nikolai is encouraging that because he's trying to prove, here's the difference between how I lead a country. Here's a difference with how my brother leads a country. My brother is an idiot. So you guys need to rethink this whole divine power strategy super fast, because if you put the country in his hands, you're not going to have a country left.
Yeah. Well, and I think he's also trying to mentally destroy Vasily as well throughout the process of this, because I think he thinks that by having Vasily have to come to these councils, it's one, going to be tiring and something he doesn't want to participate in. And two, he's assigning him things like those giant stacks of paper to take care of for trees and bridges and everything else that he knows Vasily has just kind of ignored doing his entire life and has just been the crown prince of nothing, essentially, while yeah. Nikolai's been doing all the grunt work.
I know. And he's making a huge gamble here, but he's hoping that one of two things happens. Either Vasily gets bored and doesn't want to be the king, or the council of rich white guys will tell him he can't be the king anymore because they've decided to embrace democracy. I mean, embracing democracy is clearly going great with the Grisha. So yeah. Why wouldn't it go great with rich white guys, too?
Everything is just so much better with rich white guys, isn't it, Jeff?
No.
Jeff is like,
no. I'm not even going to sarcastically say yes. No. No, 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 no,
and
no.
And for
no,
listeners, that was full even, sarcasm. No. 100 million
yes.
percent. Like,
that was 100% organic, farm to table, gluten free sarcasm.
Yeah, gluten free, cruelty free, non GMO as well.
And, oh, not cruelty free. Not hardly.
I guess that's true. All the cruelty.
Let's talk about something fun.
Sure.
Let's talk about Sergei getting an ass whooping from Tamar.
Yeah.
This is one of those moments that makes me so glad that I switch back and forth between reading the physical copy of the book and listening to the audiobook when I'm preparing for this. Mm-hmm. Because in the audiobook, listening to Lauren Fortgang as Sergei,
great.
He has just gotten his ass whooped by Tamar and like his gums are bleeding or whatever.
Uh-huh.
Sith worth than he is.
Like,
I love it.
Don't you forget it.
I love it. And we already love Tamar so much. And the fact that she is just like serving Sergei his ass is just awesome because we don't like Sergei.
He's not great.
No, he's not.
He's not great. I want like supplemental material of Botkin going off on side missions with dangerous boy and dangerous girl.
I think that is definitely a fan fiction worth writing, Jeff.
No. Yeah, sure. I'm going to do that because I have time and I don't have enough stuff to do.
Or listeners. Listeners could write that too. But yeah, I love this. And we already know that, especially you, Jeff, you love the interactions between Tamar, Tolya, and Botkin.
I love the interactions between Botkin and everybody because I just love Botkin. But having him with Tamar and Tolya, it's like, oh, I have found my children, or the closest thing to children that I would ever have. Because Botkin, he even specifically says Tamar's not going to marry. He says Tolya's not going to marry because they're like him. And I'm thinking, oh, he's not going to marry and he's not going to have children. But if he had children, these
them.
Are the children he would want to have.
Yeah, they're like the perfect kids for Botkin, 100%.
So now Botkin has the power of dad energy.
Oh, he's bringing that dad, big dad energy. BDE, big dad energy.
Yup. And as soon as Botkin says, oh, they'll never marry, that's ridiculous, because they're like me, they're bred for battle, and then Tamar notices Nadia, and I'm thinking, oh, there is instant chemistry between these two.
Oh, stay tuned, listeners.
I love it so much.
But speaking of Nadia, we actually get the introduction of her brother, Adric, into the
poor
story
little
here.
Guy. Poor
yeah.
little guy. How many times do we see this? This kid is Colin Creevy.
Oh my gosh,
he's so little and he's not ready, but he wants to be a part of this. He wants to be a part of what his sibling is up to. He wants to do something important and prove he's got steel. So, and Nadia, she makes a good point. She says to Alina, look, you can train him or you can send him away. He'll run away and he'll just end up back here in a week, or he'll get himself killed trying to get back here. So just teach him.
Yeah, it's definitely kind of a sad situation because you don't want Adric to be in any kind of danger. But it seems like given his mental state and what he wants, no matter what, he's going to end up putting himself in danger. And it's probably demoralizing and something for Nadia and something that she has probably spent a lot of time thinking about just because it's her brother. And Alina makes it very clear in this section, too, that she's the one, Nadia, meaning she's the one that is going to have to be burying her brother and in charge of the funeral services when he dies, if that's the case. And Nadia still says, just let him do it. She knows her brother and she knows he's stubborn.
And I mean, if this is the way that it has to be, then this is the way that it has to be. I am never, ever going to do or say anything to encourage the use of child soldiers. And this is what the situation is. He is a child soldier. The difference is he is not being forced into anything. He's not being brainwashed into anything. He wants to do this because it's important to him. But he's barely a teenager.
Yeah.
He shouldn't have to do these things.
It is interesting, though, because Alina notes that he's really only about 3 years younger than she is, and that's really not that big of an age difference.
Still, he's not done with his training.
Yeah, but it's still... it's an interesting situation, for sure. It definitely is interesting. But you know what else is interesting, Jeff?
I know what you're about to talk about. Before you get to that, I want to say one thing.
Fine.
Because this is going to take less time.
Okay.
So I know you're about to talk about Mal.
Yeah.
And I know it's going to come up that Zoya says something to Alina about, let me know when you're done with him, because obviously she's got the hots.
Yeah.
And here's the thing.
Yeah.
We get this really beautiful moment with Zoya where she, Alina just straight up says to her, what are you doing here? You don't even like me. Why are you following me? And she gives a good explanation. Her family was torn apart by the Fold, and she is super angry at the Darkling. So she wants to get her revenge for her family, and that is understandable. And yet, what humanizes her in this moment and makes her more relatable is walking up to Alina and telling her, look, you've got this thing with this guy, but it's pretty clear that whatever's going on, you're not sleeping with him, and I want to, so I'm just letting you know, I'm not going to hesitate to shoot my shot. How is it that she gives this really beautiful, passionate speech about why fighting the Darkling matters, and yet the thing that's most relatable about her is saying, I'ma steal your man? Why?
Zoya is beautiful and she's lovely, and I don't understand why she wants Mal, because he is far below the standard of the gentleman that she could acquire. But
I mean, come on. We've talked about this with Mal. I don't get it. He's not attractive to you, but he has characteristics that a lot of people would find sexually desirable, and that's all she's saying to Alina. She's not saying, I'm going to date this guy. I'm going to marry this guy. I want to get to know this guy. You don't appreciate this guy enough. She is saying, I want this guy for just one thing, and if you're not going to do it, I'm going to put this out on the table. Literally put this out on the table. I might let him put me out on the table. I don't know.
Yeah, given whatever the circumstances pan out to be, you never know, Jeff. You got to keep your options open.
Yeah, she just wants the one thing from him, and he is sexually attractive to her. So what?
Yeah, I mean, Alina's just kind of... She don't need him in his life anyway, in her life anyway. You take him, Zoya. You can take him.
Okay, I don't need him. Okay, let's hear it.
So, one of the things that I liked about this chapter, Jeff, is that we learn that Mal has been around a lot less recently, and Alina actually has been encouraging him to go, and she seems to think the days when he's gone, it's almost easier. And to that I say, good. Let him go. Goodbye. Leave. Now. We don't need you. You can go right now, Mal. No one wants you. Goodbye. Farewell. Evita Sane. And truly, the less Mal we have, the better. Alina has this revelation that when he's gone, days are easier. And I say, that is a sign, my friend, that this is not the man for you. If things are easier when he's not around, why you be with this man? Because this man be not the one for you. That's from the Book of Truth.
It's not.
Yes, it is.
Let me ask you this. Yeah. Let's say you get exactly what you want. Let's say Mal decides to f*** off and Alina doesn't have him around to worry about anymore.
Okay.
What next?
Then she has Tamar and Tolia to protect her. And she doesn't have to worry about Mal.
The protection's not the issue. They can't protect her from her heart. They can protect her from outside threats, but they can't protect her from her own emotions. How long do you think it would be if Mal left for good? How long do you think it would be before she went after him?
Given, in my head, what would happen is he would be gone. And it would kind of be like the first book where she's like thinking about him for a little bit, but then she realizes that her powers are stronger and life is better without him. And so then she just like kind of fully gets over him. She realizes that maybe she's a bisexual. She's kind of into Tamar. That's kind of a thing for a little while. And then it kind of peters off. And then she finds someone else. And then she realizes, hey, I'm a badass bitch. I don't need no one to define who I am. And she's fine on her own. And if she finds someone, she finds someone. If she don't, she don't.
So you would rather her be alone and be okay with being alone than for her and Mal to come to some kind of understanding?
If you can't love yourself, how the hell you gonna love somebody else? So she gotta love herself first. And then she can love somebody else. But right now, she's depending too hard on Mal.
Can she learn to do that while she's trying to put together an army and win a war, though?
You know, sometimes some of the most traumatic and crazy things in our life are the things that build the highest amount of self-confidence.
So you think she could do both? You think that she could forsake years of emotional attachment to this person and learn to be happy being alone and at the same time fight off the Darkling, deal with politicians who are men, and unite a country?
I think with, like, having Tamar as a support system there, I think that she definitely could do it. I think that just the revelation of, hey, it's actually a little bit easier mentally when he's not around is a huge thing, because obviously when he is there, she's dealing with a lot of extra added mental baggage that she doesn't even have to deal with when he's not around. So I think it's definitely possible.
Okay.
I like, genuinely, liking Mal or not, I don't think that's an unreasonable thing. If life is easier for you when someone's not around, even if you love them or not, maybe it's just best that they're not around you so much.
Possibly.
I think I make a valid point.
Somewhat.
Yeah. Jeff doesn't want to just give me a full autonomy on this because he wants to make sure that there is at least some kind of counterpoint out there in the world for me and my Mal hating.
No, you make an interesting point. I just think it's a lot for Alina to have to deal with all at one time. Like, she would have to repress. The way I look at it is she could only win all of this and do what she has to do if she repressed how she feels about Mal and then dealt with it later. And the issue with repressing your feelings for somebody, whether it's a healthy attachment or an unhealthy one, is that when those feelings inevitably come back up again years later, it would be an emotional equivalent of her repressing her powers when she was a child to try to make sure that she and Mal were never separated in the first place. And I don't know mentally how she would deal with that, because she could come through it, but there are lots of people who never do.
Yeah, that's a valid point. I feel like she's building up a good support system, though, and she's in a much better place now to get through it than she was in the first book. Like, she actually has people who support her now, instead of just her kind of wayward friendship with Jenya at that point. She has Tamar and Tolya, and she can, if she really wanted to, she could go talk to Nikolai, too.
No, I will say this. If she weren't the Sun Summoner, I would agree that your version of how she could handle that and become more independent and not emotionally attached to anybody, if she weren't the Sun Summoner, then I would agree. That could work out great. Because the problem is she's constantly in the public eye now. The more meetings she goes to, the more people she cozies up to, she's constantly going to have to be in front of other people. And the real issue there is that she has to be a leader. And you cannot be a leader and be vulnerable in front of the people that you're leading, especially when you're talking about a government and a military that is mostly dominated by rich men who only understand other rich men. She's a woman who has come from nothing, and she's a Grisha. So in every way to them, she is an other. And if she doesn't project a mantle of strength and confidence constantly, they are never going to take her seriously. So for her to do that and deal with all this emotional stuff behind the scenes, I just feel like it's a big ask. Even if she has a support system in place.
See, I feel like Mal isn't really contributing. His presence isn't really contributing to her having a higher confidence level in a lot of situations.
He wants to, but he doesn't identify with all of the other people she surrounded herself with. If she had anybody else in her support system that was like him, then that might be a little easier. But that's just it. She is surrounded by other Grisha. Other Ravkin nobles. There is nobody else in her life who is like him. So there's nobody else that he can talk to but her, and she's not available to him because of the position she has put herself in.
He doesn't want to recognize that she is a badass boss bitch that is moving up in the world, and he is dirt.
You know what? Why don't we go to the pickle party in chapter 18? Let's go to the pickle party. There's other things to talk about at the pickle party.
Oh, don't worry. We're not done yet.
Okay. Chapter 18. First of all, it's fun to say pickle party, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. And I love pickles, Jeff. So pickle I'm very party. Excited for being at a pickle party. And
I would be disappointed if I showed up to this party and they were not serving pickles.
It doesn't sound like they're serving pickles. There was nothing.
It doesn't sound like they're serving food. It just sounds like they're serving alcohol because everybody's drunk and taking advantage of the entertainment.
Yeah. Where are the pickles? I mean, come on. If you're going to advertise it as a pickle party, you might as well really come through hard.
Did they advertise it as a pickle party, though, or is it just this pickle merchant who is throwing this party?
I need pickles. I mean, come on. Come through. Come through, pickle man.
I like pickles. Pickles are delicious.
But this is kind of, I feel like this chapter is, when it started, I knew something was going to go wrong. It's one of those chapters where you start off, you're doing something that is quote unquote against the rules. They're headed out on a party, a pickle party specifically. And yeah. It's against the rules and Tamar goes with them and she's very skeptical. Mal is the one who has convinced Alina to go to this party and Alina's excited. She's a little scared, but she's excited. As far as we can tell, Mal is kind of in the same boat. He's a little bit cautious, but definitely excited to be away from the little palace and be able to be with Alina. But I don't know about you, Jeff, but I just kind of smelt something bad happening from the beginning. And it turns out there is something smelly at the end of this chapter, too.
Well, I mean, think about it. I agree. I felt like this was going to go badly no matter what it was, because they have to sneak out. And anytime you're supposed to stay in a castle to stay safe from your enemies and you sneak out for any reason, something is going to go bad. That's a given. Something about the fact that they have to dress up like Suli fortune tellers and put on fake accents and pretend to read people's fortunes, like through reading cards or reading coffee grounds or tea leaves or what have you, it just feels offensive. I know that the Suli people are fictional, but still, this feels remarkably like something that would happen in the real world that would be kind of offensive.
Yeah, I mean, from what we've seen in these books so far and where the rich white people seem to hold their level of entertainment, and I think we'll probably see a little bit more of that. What I'm thinking about is in like Six of Crows, where we see some more of that entertainment playing out of what the hierarchy people like. That's where I'm going to leave it, Jeff. I'm just going to say that. It seems like from these books that the standards for white people parties are not the most PC, I would say.
No, because we only ever see the rich white people throwing parties. So it's classist, it's racist, it's sexist. That's what all these rich white people parties are in these books. It's just more of the same. It's men putting their hands on women. Yep. It's white people taking advantage of people from other places and abusing their cultures. I mean, they've contracted these Suli fortune tellers for entertainment.
Yeah.
Whatever you call it, whether you call it divination or fortune telling, whatever the politically correct term for that sort of thing would be these days, the fact that you're appropriating that culture by bringing it in and paying these people, I have no doubt they're paying them a pittance.
Oh,
and calling
it
entertainment, you shouldn't do that. It's awful.
Yeah.
And then it doesn't help that in order to blend in and do this, Mal and Alina have to put on the accents. But then again, we do accents on the show.
Yeah.
We do that, and people will have their opinions about whether or not our accents are offensive. I will say that our Australian Botkin Santa does not seem to have found my bad Australian accent offensive, and for that, I thank them.
Yes, thank you. Thank you, Australian Botkin Santa.
Now, it is funny the way they mess with these rich people, like telling the girl that she's going to have to marry an overweight man, or telling the overweight rich man that he's going to go bald, and then they start talking about how they're going to get a disease where their d*** are falling off.
Yeah. I thought that was good.
I wish there had been a way for them to create the illusional sensation of that happening, almost like it had been psychosomatic, like somebody says, oh, you're going to get this disease and your d*** is going to fall off, and then suddenly you feel a twitching in your pants and you're like, whoa, what the f*** is going on? And then you're like grabbing your crotch and running towards the bathroom, and all your rich friends are like, hey, what's going on over there? He's like, not now, my f*** is falling off.
I think that would be great.
Rich people are the worst. Actually, you know what? No. Rich people are awful. They're not the worst. You know who's the worst?
The person you can smell from a mile away.
God, oh my gosh, the tension in this moment where suddenly it goes dark and somebody's grabbing Alina and dragging her off, and you're like, see, told you, you left the castle, you shouldn't have, you put on a disguise, you shouldn't have, now you're being dragged off, and it's the apparat, and he's talking about all how people
Alina
are...
Starkov.
No, Alina Starkov! The world is going to be cleansed, and holy fire! And I'm like, okay, anytime religious people are talking about holy fire, that's the time where you should probably have left like 10 minutes ago, at least. Anytime somebody in a religious organization like the Cult of the Sun Summoner starts talking about holy fire, that is the cue that you probably should have left like 10 minutes ago.
Yeah.
Holy fire is not a good sign. The kinds of religious people who mean you no harm don't normally talk about holy fire. That's kind of a scary Old Testament thing that usually means that they either think the world is going to end or they want you to believe that it is.
Yeah, and generally speaking, trusting someone who you can smell before you see and pulls you through a bush to kidnap you, also not a good idea.
Terrible signs. Yeah, if somebody has to force a meeting with you, then this is not a person you need to have a meeting with because they have forced it on you on purpose.
Yeah.
And, you know, he says his usual apparat stuff about how the people are worshipping Alina and that she has a duty and that she should go with him and that she shouldn't go back to the little palace. And it's so obvious that he is just trying to be another man in her life that is trying to manipulate her into doing what he wants her to do.
Yep.
And yet... that is, I mean, that's a given. It's what he does. It's what most of the men in her life are doing. But what I want to know most about the apparat is, how has his oral health not killed him? His gums are black. His teeth are barely hanging on. And I know there's a link between oral health and things like heart disease or the likelihood of heart attacks. I mean, they may not be directly linked to one another, but there is some connection. I know that because that's what they went over with us in health class whenever we grouse about why brushing our teeth is so important, apart from being able to keep your own teeth.
Keep your own teeth. Plus, it's just, that must be painful.
You would think, because I know that a lot of us have probably had a cavity, and a cavity is bad enough, but imagine having oral health so bad your gums are discolored. Do you know how bad your oral health has to be for that?
Oh, that's like scurvy 5.0 right there. That's just a disgusting, disgusting, disgusting. Like, he's probably hasn't brushed his teeth since he was a child. And Lord only knows how old this man is. We have no idea how, the age of this old fart.
We don't know the age of a lot of these people, because like we said, they're bad at time. They're not worried about
it. Yeah, that's... don't worry about that. We got the apparat to worry about. It's interesting, too, though, because the conversation that he has with Alina, he's trying to get her to come with him, and she very much so is like, no. And then she realizes that he probably knows where the Firebird is, and she actually tries to threaten him. And it kind of almost works. And then she's almost tempted to follow him because she's like, he must know what's going on. And then he tells her something very interesting, Jeff. And that is that the journals and the books of Morozova are possibly hidden somewhere in the little palace and they haven't been destroyed. Dun, 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 dun.
That I believe. I believe that he knows enough to know that. But as far as her getting her hands on those journals if she goes with him, I don't believe that.
Oh, no, I don't believe that either.
Because I instantly do not believe that he would give her anything that she would actually want. More likely, he would probably try to get her to, he would mansplain to her why she doesn't actually want what she thinks she wants, and then just subjugate her into servitude like all the rest of them.
Oh, yeah, 100%.
That's what he would do.
There's no way he's just going to be like, well, here are the journals and the books. Have fun, Alina Starkov. Alina Starkov. Have fun.
Alina Starkov. It's more important than ever that the apparat be represented this way because Gilbert Gottfried has passed on to eternity. And we wish him a delightful eternal slumber.
R.I.P.
R.I.P. Gilbert Gottfried. You were a really, you had a really filthy sense of humor a lot of the time, but you were a great entertainer and you gave, you added a lot to the world of entertainment. And for that, we thank you.
Yes. Aladdin would not be the same without you.
No, Aladdin would not be what it was if not for that iconic performance. There are two people who made Aladdin what it is, him and Robin Williams.
Oh, exactly.
Without those two people, Aladdin would have been haute garbage and none of the rest of it would have mattered. Mm-hmm. It just would have been another Disney movie with shirtless men who have no nipples, because if they add nipples, then they have to explain it.
Yep. You know what else is haute garbage, Jeff?
What else is haute garbage?
Mal and Alina's communication right now. Both of them.
God.
This is...
I walked right into that one.
Jeff set himself up, and he did not realize it.
You got me, girl.
I gotcha.
You got me, girl.
I gotcha good. And...
All right, fine.
I mean, this is the last segment of the chapter, too, so I think it's time to let Juliana go off a little bit, you know?
You never go off a little bit when it comes to Mal. You get started, and then it builds up ahead of steam, and you don't stop unless we figure out a way to, like, throw something in front of you.
This exact chapter, the first time I read through the books, Jeff, is the chapter that, like, fully set to flame my annoyance and hatred for the relationship between Mal and Alina. This is the point in which my first read through, I was like, this. Because it is so horrible. The communication level between the two of them. Uh-huh. And just the power dynamic that Mal is trying to hold. And just, I hate that Alina is not telling Mal about the Darkling. And they have the whole rigid kiss interaction because the Darkling is like, hey. Hey.
That makes me laugh. It shouldn't make me laugh, but I laugh when they have this tension because it's starting to happen. You can almost see it. They're talking to each other.
And
he's telling her,
spoil bitch a lot of the time in this. Like, let's be real here. He's like, I came here for you. I'm the man, and I came here for you. Look at me. I came here for you. You came here for the country. You didn't ask me to, but I did. You didn't ask me to do it, but I'm the martyr anyway.
That isn't all he's... Okay, see, this is what I'm talking about. If I don't cut you off at this point, then you're just going to keep going, because that is not all he says, and you know it. You don't want to admit it, but you know it. You will never admit that he is making points in this chapter. No. He spends time with these people because she wanted him to do it, and the only thing they see when they look at him is the guy that they think Alina is f***ing, and that is what they want to ask him about. So now he's in this position where he's having to defend her honor, even though he knows he shouldn't have to because she's capable of taking care of herself. But what's he gonna do? He tell them something that's not true, or say nothing at all so that they'll assume something that's not true? No. He can't do that. He doesn't like being in this position, but he's doing it.
Well, I mean, in reality, they not be f***ing Jeff.
Of course they not be. They're about to be in this moment.
Oh,
he's trying, okay? He's trying to communicate with her, because until they start telling each other things that are difficult to hear so that they can get all this out in the open, their relationship is either going to be what it is or it's going to get worse. And that's going to take its emotional toll on both of them. And I know you don't care about the toll it takes on Mal.
Nope.
But it's going to take its toll on Alina, too. Do you care about Alina?
I do care about Alina. And I will say, I'm very aggravated with her in this scene as well, too. So don't discount my aggravation just to Mal.
Oh, no. You and I are 100% on the same table when it comes to that. She has this. Of all the times she could have been honest with Mal.
She needs to
yes.
speak.
Absolutely. She has had multiple opportunities to tell Mal and other people she's seeing the Darkling because he keeps popping up.
Yeah.
But this would have been, of all the times she has seen him in this book, this was the moment for yeah. her to come clean with Mal and say, I can't function because the Darkling keeps popping up in like force projections in front of me, and I don't know how to stop him. And I really want to be close to you in this moment, but I can't do it with him over your shoulder going, hi. Which again, him doing that is funny. It to me, it's in a way, it's funnier than the thought of him runway walking up and down the chapel, like tossing those
yes.
Ravkin hymnals up in the air
yes.
as he's doing his big reveals of whatever garment he's wearing that we came
yes.
up with.
Yes.
That this to me is funnier because all the other times he popped up and was like, hi, this is the moment where she and Mal, it's so sinister.
Oh,
they're finally
so
talking. They are this close to finally having the conversation that they need to have. And they are about to be physically intimate to boot on top of that. And then he just shows up, waggles his little fingers. He doesn't even have to say anything, but he does. Because I do believe he says,
yeah.
go ahead. Bet. Tell him that you see me. Go ahead. Tell him. No, yeah. I'm waiting. I mean, I can literally do this
I'm
all
just,
day
I'm
because I'm the Darkling
out.
And presumably I never sleep. So go ahead. Go ahead.
Yeah.
Tell
him. Say it. It's just so aggravating.
But she doesn't.
It's so aggravating.
I know.
I just wanted to like yell at my book. The first time I read this, I literally almost yelled at my book. I knew it was coming this time around, but it's still so frustrating because at this point, not only is the Darkling showing up to her and affecting like her mental health and all those other things, he's physically interfering with interactions that she's having with other people in a tangible way. And that is when you need to speak about what is happening when your actual human to human interactions are being affected by something.
You could even say this too. This might be kind of a dangerous point, but you know what? Screw it. I'm going to go here with this. Are you prepared for me to go here with this? Because I'm going to go here with this.
I don't know where you're going, but I'm gonna jump on this ride. Strap me in, Jeff. Here we go. Okay.
Alina and Mal are about to be intimate. He shows up and he puts a stop in her ability to be intimate with the person she chooses to be intimate with. He is controlling her reproductive rights. Boom.
He's a Republican.
Oh, boy.
You didn't see that one coming, did you, Jeff?
I knew it was going to be something. I didn't know how you were going to phrase it. That was that was funny.
Yeah.
That was funny.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Yeah. I mean, definitely, sure. And as we already know, Jeff, and as you and I personally agree to be true, that a female's reproductive rights are all her own and she should not have that control by, one, anyone but herself, and two, especially a white male. And he is that, and yeah, sure, I can get behind that he is trying to control her reproductive rights. And that's not cool.
Yeah, headcanon drag queen or no. The Darkling choosing this particular moment, I know I just praised it for being so sinister, but you know what? I'm going to retract that because now I'm thinking him choosing this moment to interfere with her is actually interfering with her choice of who to take as a partner and when, and that's just another form of policing her body, and that is icky.
That's not cool.
That is absolutely 100% not okay. And you know what? Say what you will about Mal, and you will. This was the partner that she chose, and this was going to be the moment, and then the Darkling interfered with that. And because Alina cannot be honest with Mal, Mal thinks it's because of something that he did wrong.
Yeah, and he actually makes the comparison to a bunch of other people that he's like either kissed or slept with, and he's like, I know what it's like when we have these interactions with people, and this is not it. This is you retracting and rejecting me, and I'm going to leave. And she actually thinks to herself, I'm going to go after him and tell him, but she doesn't. And I'm literally screaming into the void, being like, girl, you got to go tell him what's going on. If you really care about him, even though he's a complete head and douche canoe, like, you gotta let your feelings be known and speak your truth, my friend.
Can I get you to admit this? I don't know, but I'm gonna try. I'm not try to get you to admit it. I'm going to ask you a question and see what comes from it.
Sure.
When Mal believes incorrectly that she is no longer interested in having this moment with him, and he backs off from it instead of trying to force it the way some other guys might, does he get any points from you for that?
So, I will say yes, Jeff, because I was actually going to say a little bit earlier, but I didn't actually have it come out of my mouth. But Mal is very good on the whole at asking for consent, generally speaking, in the relationship he has with Alina. So I think that he, even though I don't like him, he usually is pretty respectful of boundaries. And I say in that respect, I think that's a good thing. So he can have a little bit of leeway for me on that front.
So we can agree on that. We're not going to dispute Mal as a douche canoe because he acts like one. Whether you believe he acts like a douche canoe for reasons that are understandable and can have anything be done about them is what's up for debate. But we can also agree here the fact that this douche canoe of a man does at least respect consent. Mm-hmm. That is something that I think we should value.
Yes, that is something. Like everyone else in these books, Mal is definitely a multifaceted character. Do I hate most of his facets? Yes. Are there a few that are fine? Yes. So I think that this is one of the few that falls into the, this is an okay and good thing about Mal, because consent is sexy, my friends. It's very
consent
sexy.
Consent is very, very sexy. That, and you know what? Unless they're just... they look like those weird boulders stacked on top of each other. Arms are sexy, and I bet he's got sexy arms.
I will let you keep that in your headcanon brain, Jeff, because in my head, Mal is just a douche canoe of bleh.
You just want him to be this ugly lump of a man.
Yes,
this ugly lump of a man who can't string words together.
Mm-hmm,
and
please.
You know what? I know I throw a lot at you that sounds like I'm just trying to disagree with you, but honestly, I do just think it makes for great conversation if one of us takes one side of it and the other takes the other side of it, just because I know that the majority of people who have interacted with us about the show seem to be, they're on your side. But on the other hand, you could say that the more we have the debate, the more opportunities there are to present those opinions in a way that facilitates discussion rather than everybody just sitting around agreeing, oh yeah, Mal's the worst. Mal's a jerk. I hate Mal.
No,
because
I agree.
If everybody just sits around agreeing with each other all the time, that could be fun for some things. But I think for stuff like this, it's fun if we can discuss it.
Yeah, no, I completely agree, Jeff. Even though I hate Mal, I think it's good that we both have different stances on a lot of the things because it definitely makes the conversation a lot more interesting. And I can
It's fun. Like, I don't want to make it sound like I'm poking a bear here, but just
yes,
when
are.
You really get going, okay, fine, I'm poking a bear. Whatever. Figure it out. when I poke the bear, as it were, and you really get going about Mal, people can't see your face.
Hi.
Because we can see each other's faces when we do the show, but seeing your face when I poke the bear about Mal when it comes to you is hilarious.
Yeah, I'm definitely someone whose face was made to be on a theater stage. I can make very bold and big expressive motions with the entirety of my face, including my eyebrows. Thank you very much.
And now for something completely different. For our fun segment, we're doing something that I am going to call a back to school breakdown. And Juliana, you actually got this idea from a different podcast that you were listening to, and it sounded fun, so we decided to try it. Tell me, what was the show you were listening to that this came from?
I genuinely forget which show it was from, so I apologize. But there was a show that I was listening to where they were reading reviews of their old schools that they used to go to, like their high school and their middle school and things like that. And it was just so funny reading either students' or parents' reviews of these schools, because generally speaking, Jeff, I don't know about you, but when I go to school, I'm not like, oh, wow, I must write a review of my school. So the people who go out of their way to write Yelp reviews, one, are an interesting brand of people. And people who go out of their way to write reviews of schools are a whole other brand of interesting people. So I have a feeling that you found some interesting things while looking around.
Is it just the idea of writing a, as you say, reviewing a school is interesting enough, but Yelp is a place where I feel like the intention was that you would review restaurants.
Yeah.
Or entertainment destinations to let people know if they should go there or not. Because they did a whole, one of my favorite South Park episodes is, it's a takedown of Yelp reviewers. The episode is called You're Not Yelping. But it's everybody in town suddenly gets really into being a food critic for Yelp. And they go into restaurants and they let the restaurant owners know that they are a Yelp reviewer, and acting like it entitles them to something. And they're also caught up in themselves and their own sense of entitlement, that everybody in town thinks they are the only Yelp reviewer that anyone is taking seriously, when really half the town is doing it.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I know I listened to this podcast called Beach Too Sandy, Water Too Wet. And they every week they have a theme that they read the worst reviews in the most dramatic fashion. That is the theme of the show, and they have done things that are like wild themes, like the world's biggest item museum. They reviewed like that, things like that, or like or like Waffle Houses in Kentucky.
Oh gosh, you could that's a show. So getting back to the school thing, what we decided to do was, since we can drag this out a little bit, because why not? We've decided that whenever we do this back to school breakdown, each of us will take a school that we went to and we'll break it down, just whatever we can find. I didn't find any Yelp reviews for my elementary school, but I decided, since that's the first school that I went to for a number of years, I'm starting with my elementary school. I did find some information that I think you'll find fascinating, and some of it we can talk about.
Oh, okay. So you don't have any reviews?
I have reviews. They're not Yelp reviews, but I do have reviews.
Oh, okay. Perfect. Okay.
Don't worry. We'll get to the reviews.
Okay.
So, I went to Green Valley Elementary School in New Albany, Indiana. And I liked it for the most part. What I liked most about it was across the street from the church that my dad was the pastor of when we first came to New Albany. And then when my parents split up, my dad moved away, but my mom stayed in town. And I remember when we were looking for a house, she was specifically only for looking for houses within a certain radius of my school, because she grew up changing schools constantly, which is a whole story. And she wanted to make sure we never had to do that. So she wanted to make sure we stayed at this school, which I appreciated. And when I looked up information about Green Valley Elementary School now, well, I tell you what, instead of me telling you what it made me think, I'm going to share with you some of what I found. And I want you to tell me if you think this sounds like a good school or a bad school.
Okay.
Okay?
Uh-huh.
All right. So, first of all, as a matter of interest, there are 1,116 elementary schools in Indiana. Mm-hmm. Where on that list do you think Green Valley falls?
Is one being the top school?
Yes, number one being the top school and number 1,016 being the worst elementary school in Indiana. Where do you think Green Valley is?
957.
Yikes. That would make it almost the worst. Not quite. According to a website called School Digger, which I guess has information about schools, it is 632nd out of 116 elementary schools in Indiana. So not terrible, but not the best.
Yeah, about
half. About half. So the student-teacher ratio is about 20.7, so about almost 21 teachers per student, which sounds like what I remember.
Mm-hmm.
And the number of students at the school is approximately 394.
Okay.
And then the number of students who are on free or discounted lunch is 74.1%.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the national average is for that, but to me, that sounds kind of high.
Yeah,
I remember we were not on free or discounted lunch, and I was unaware of what other students in my class would have been on free or discounted lunch, which was none of my business. But almost 3/4 of the school receives either free lunch or discounted lunch. And to me, that sounds kind of high.
Yeah, that seems a little bit high to me, too.
So according to Public School Review, Green Valley Elementary School placed in the bottom 50% of all schools in Indiana for overall test scores, and the percentage of students achieving proficiency in math is 40 to 44%. But the one that really kind of concerned me was the percentage of students achieving proficiency in reading and language arts is 25 to 29%.
Ooh.
The Indiana state average is 49%.
Ooh.
That actually just kind of made me worried about the state of Indiana, if I'm honest. But what do you think? Based on this, do you think I went to a bad school or a good school?
I think maybe they need to teach English a little bit better, probably.
Well, and see, that's when I read those reviews, I wondered, are they just going by state test scores, or
probably.
Are they actually like averaging together everybody's grades? Because I remember
test scores, probably.
Probably. I didn't do so great on standardized tests because I didn't care. I didn't take them seriously. And you can spin this to kids any way you want, but it's difficult to get kids to take standardized tests seriously. Would you agree?
Oh, I could not take a standardized test when I was a kid. It was so hard.
I couldn't, even if you give them a perfectly well-reasoned argument for why standardized tests are important, things like that just don't matter very much to children. Because what do they care if the school gets more or less money? They won't really understand the consequences of that until they're happening, and they still might not notice.
Yeah.
So I don't know. Maybe it's a struggle, and I know a lot of people who are teachers. So I would imagine they would probably have some thoughts on this, because I'm sure a lot of them have to do standardized tests in whatever state they live in with their students. So this probably comes up with them. But that's just what I think. Let's take a look at what some other people think about Green Valley Elementary School. I have a 1-star review, I have a 2-star review, and I have a 4-star review.
Ooh.
What would you like me to start with?
Okay, so let's start with the 4-star review, and I would like you to make up silly names for each person that is giving the review.
Okay.
So don't give me the real name, but give me a fake silly name.
Okay, so this is Mrs. Bridgerton.
Okay, what is
I'm making that up.
What does Mrs. Bridgerton have to say?
So Mrs. Bridgerton gives the school a 4 out of 5 on homework, a 3 out of 5 on teachers, and a 3 out of 5 on character with a 4-star review. They said, Miss Burr, who teaches K, is such a wonderful teacher. I'm assuming K stands for kindergarten.
Mm-hmm.
I wish my son could have her every year. He cried when he came home on his last day of school because he was going to miss her. He's now in the 2nd grade. His 1st grade teacher was okay, nothing special, and this year his teacher is out on maternity leave. The sub they have teaching the class is a helper, not a teacher, and I'm not so sure about her. I can't wait until his teacher starts teaching the class this year. My son has informed me today of several issues with the sub. I'm going to get it straightened out tomorrow.
That is some subtle shade if I've ever seen it in my life.
So what did I say? Miss Bridgerton, Mrs. Bridgerton.
Yeah. She's calling out that sub like it's her job. Just being like, everything is great. We love the kindergarten teacher, but you know that sub that you have on? We don't like her.
I mean, it's normal for kids. I mean, kids love their kindergarten teachers just because I feel like...
You're learning colors. You're eating snacks and you're learning colors. That's all you're doing in kindergarten.
And not just that. Some of my friends who studied education went on to be kindergarten teachers. And not all teachers in every grade have to be the same. But I can tell you that it takes a very special kind of person to be a kindergarten teacher. Because at that age, kids, they want to get up and move around. And it's hard to get them to focus sometimes just because they're little kids. You know, they're in that spot between when they're toddlers and when they're starting to grow up and learn to have to concentrate and take their schoolwork seriously. Like, kindergarten is like the last vestige of childhood freedom. You have responsibilities starting in first grade. You have homework. You have tests. They're spelling tests, but still, you have tests. You have, you know, things that kindergartners don't really have to worry about. There's a lot less fun and a lot more work. It's like this snap that happens between kindergarten and first grade. And they make it into a graduation. They make it into a celebration. And I love it.
I didn't get a graduation.
You didn't get a graduation?
No, I didn't have a kindergarten graduation. You kidding me?
You know what? We'll throw you a kindergarten graduation at some point to make up for it.
Good. I know my ABCs. Thank you very much. I also learned my phone number. So that was something I learned in kindergarten, too.
Excellent. But this person's review seems to be they are trusting that what the child is telling them is true. But it sounds to me like maybe the child is just not responding as well to the substitute. So yeah. I applaud the parent for wanting to investigate what's going on. That feels kind of like trust but verify to me, which I believe in. But at the same time, I'm wondering if maybe the student just misses their kindergarten teacher, because you know what? This Miss Burr that they're talking about, I know her.
Oh,
I had
okay.
the teacher across the hall, but I did have Miss Burr a couple of days too. If my teacher didn't come in,
I
had
like her?
Her, and she was, she was great.
Okay.
But Miss Turnage was great too. Miss Turnage was my kindergarten teacher, and Miss Burr was the teacher across the hall, but they were both really wonderful teachers. So in a way, it's nice to know, and this review was written 6 years ago, but it's nice to know that between when I left Green Valley and 2016, that Miss Burr was still teaching kindergarten there. That's amazing.
Yeah, that's awesome.
All right, you want the 2-star review or the 1-star review?
Yeah, let's work our way down. So let's do the 2-star.
Okay, so this one I'm saying was written by Tommy 2-star.
Mm-hmm.
So Tommy 2-star says, the other children are picking on and bullying my daughter, who is in third grade, so she's acting out by refusing to go into class after recess or crawling under her desk. I have explained to the assistant's principal and principal the reasons for her behavior, but they just turned it around to say she is causing the bullies and mean kids to pick on her by her behavior, with 3 question marks.
Oh, wow. Okay. Mm.
Tommy 2-stars sounds to me like their kid might have gone through some of the things that I went through, because I remember there being a lot of times, and I don't know if other schools are like this, but there were times where I got picked on and I tried to explain the way I was handling myself or what was going on that the other teachers weren't seeing, and I seem to remember there being not a whole lot of support.
Yeah, that's kind of a thing that can happen sometimes.
A lot of schools in general do not know how to combat bullying, because they have to try to remain neutral so that it seems like they aren't showing favoritism or automatically suspecting anyone who is accused of bullying. But come on, how long has bullying in schools been a problem? How many cautionary tales do we need?
How would you like to be this kid that's your parent, and when you get up to middle school, everyone discovers that your parent wrote this review of the school when you were like in elementary school? How would you love to be that kid, Jeff?
I don't think they're gonna find out though, because students don't read review. No, yeah, no, because students do not.
These kids are very tech savvy right now.
Yeah, but kids, I mean, come on. Kids waste time on TikTok and Snapchat. They don't go on websites reading reviews of their schools. They don't care.
You never know. There's going to be that one kid who finds it, and everyone finds out about it, and they're like, your dad is such an idiot.
the only way kids at the school are going to find out that this parent wrote this review is if the teachers and the administration at the school are dumb enough to let that out there, because they're going to guess who was getting bullied. They're going to figure out whose parent it was. And if the teachers and the administration are dumb enough to say that they found out about this because of an internet review, then they're going to guess that the review was written by that kid's parent. But if they don't do it that way, then the kids are never going to know about this review. But my heart goes out to this poor kid, because I remember those days. I remember days of not wanting to go to school, not wanting to come back in from recess, from not hiding from physical intimidation, but just not wanting to engage in class at all, because I knew it was going to put me directly in the path of people who were going to be unkind to me. I remember that.
Yeah.
So whatever came from that review that was written 6 years ago, I hope things have gotten better for that kid. And I hope things have gotten better for that parent.
Yeah, probably not like the best way to complain about your kid being mistreated on the review site.
Well, if you've tried everything else, then what else can you do? I mean, if you've called, if you've tried to go into the office, if you've tried to figure out how to deal directly with the parents of the other kids whose identities the school would not give you to protect the parents from retaliation, then what other options do you have? Go to the public.
I guess that's true.
All right, so Wanda, so Tommy 2-star was our last person, and Wanda 1-star is our 1-star reviewer. This review was actually written in 2013, so this was about 9 years ago. It says, "This school is a terrible school. I was a former student here. While there are two teachers that I just love, most of them were unhelpful and testy with students. The two teachers I loved were Mrs. Neville, who worked with my younger brother who had behavioral problems and helped him a lot. The other was Mrs. Burr, who taught kindergarten and did the same. But Mrs. Neville is by far the best teacher my family has ever had the pleasure of dealing with." So once again, we have shout-outs for Miss Burr, who apparently is destined to go down in history as the greatest elementary school teacher at Green Valley.
Yeah, I mean, she's in the Hall of Fame for kindergarten teachers at this point. She's in 2 reviews.
And I mean, this one's just, the other ones I feel like got very specific. This one was just kind of general. They said, there's two teachers that I really liked, and one of them was because they helped my brother, but every other teacher at this school was just terrible. Yeah, they suck.
They suck. I love the idea of like a small child writing that review and just being like, everything sucks except for my favorite teacher. And that's
what I would have written. I would have just written, I liked the teachers that I liked, but everybody else at the school can just
mean.
F*** off.
We don't like them. Da, 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 da.
Now, before we move off from Green Valley Elementary School, I will tell you that if you were to look at this school, like if you saw pictures of what the school looked like when I went there, and then you saw what the school looks like today, you wouldn't think that the stats that I read to you about Green Valley apply to them now, because it looks like a fancy prep school now.
Oh, wow.
It looks great on the outside, and I know there's students there who are academically successful and who go on to do great things, because I went to school with those kids for elementary all the way through high school, and I know where they ended up. So I feel like, in a way, that strengthens the argument that the standardized tests don't tell you everything, and some of these kiddos are doing great.
Okay. Well, thank you, Jeff, for that lovely, fun segment.
Yeah, let's come back to this another time. Next time we do this, we'll hear about your elementary school.
Oh, Mary D. Stone School. We welcome you to Mary D. Our Mary D. Stone School. Oh, yes, we had a song. Thank you very much.
If we had a song, I never learned it. And I learned a lot of songs at that school. I was in orchestra, band, and choir. Thank you very much.
Oh, anytime we had a visitor in the auditorium, we sang that to them. To welcome them, to let them know, like, hey, you're here to talk to us from, like, the police or whatever. So, and there's a motion. We have to do, like, the hand motions. Welcome, welcome, we welcome you. We welcome you to Mary D., our Mary D. Stone School. Welcome.
So here's the thing about last week's question. Normally, we post it to our Instagram, and that's where most of the response comes from. We get great emails from you guys from time to time, but a lot of the response surrounding our podcast question in particular seems to come from our Instagram. Juliana and I have both had very, very busy schedules recently, and we did an oopsie and forgot to put the question up on our Insta. So we are going to repeat our question, and we are going to use the same one for next week. So our question once again will be, if you were a material guy, what kind of inventions would you create to strengthen the Second Army?
Okay, and if you would like to send us an answer to that, you can send it over to our Instagram, or you can send it to us in an email. And on our next episode, we are going to be talking about Siege and Storm chapters 19 and 20. So if you'd like to get ahead of the ball and read those chapters, go ahead and go for it. And we'll see you in about 2 weeks from now, or sooner if you're listening to this a little bit later. And if you'd like to get in contact with us here over on the pod, you can listen to us where all pods are cast, and you can even find us on YouTube at Into the Fold Podcast.
And just to reiterate, our Instagram is at Into the Fold Pod. We put our podcast question there. We put all kinds of memes up there, most of which are made by Juliana. And we try to keep in touch with our listeners and the other accounts out there who are really doing their bit for the Grishaverse fandom. So you can find us there if you would like to join in on the fun.
Yes, and if you would like to send us a more long-form answer to either our question or just something that's on your mind, you can email it to intothefoldpod@gmail.com.
And if you want to do something nice to help us out, you can leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts or on Spotify. We'd love to see those. We love to share them here on the show. But we also appreciate the emails like the one that we got from our new friend, Anna. So Anna, once again, thank you for your thoughts and thank you for your concerns about us using correct terminology. We really appreciate that.
And if you'd really like to do us a solid, you can tell other people you know who are Grishaverse fans to listen to the pod, because the best way that podcasts are spread is by word of mouth. So thank you to anyone who has done that, and thank you to everyone in advance going forward. And Jeff, until next time.
We will see you in the fold, but only if that's okay with you, because consent is sexy. Okay, yeah, that's good.
Yeah.
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 Jeff is a dingle hopper.
Jeff is a dingle hopper.
He likes to eat macaroni and cheese while sitting on his head.
He likes to eat macaroni and cheese while sitting on his head.
And he has his cat sitting on his bum.
And he has his cat sitting on his bum.
He's an odd duck.
Yeah. He's an odd duck.
We'll keep him around, though.
We'll keep him around, though.
No, no, no. This would be the most boring podcast in the entire world.
This would be the most boring podcast in the entire world if you just keep repeating me. I'm still doing this.
Orange.
Orange.
Shenanigans.
Shenanigans.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Supercalifragilisticexpialidocious.
Moist.
Let's start the show.
It says we have 2 minutes left on the timer, Jeff, up there. I just saw that. I didn't see it any earlier.
I know. We'll just wrap up this point and then I'll stop.
Okay. Yeah.
Actually, you know what? We should go ahead and stop.
Yeah, because we have a few
I'll stop
things.
And restart the meeting.
Okay, that sounds good.
Bitch. Oh, yeah. Bitch.
Why does it say okay. Remaining meeting time? 5, 9 minutes, Jeff.
Because it's going to keep doing this. So you know what? Let's finish this part up and then I will recreate a new meeting. And this worked last time where we clapped back in, but everything was still lined up perfectly.
Yeah,
so we'll just have to keep doing that.
Because
I'm sorry, I'm not giving them $15 a month. I'm not doing it.
No. As Mama Ru says, if you don't know how to love yourself, how the hell you going to love someone else? Amen.
That was a nice try.
Amen. Amen.
That was a good try.
Yeah.
That was a good try.
That doesn't give away anything. It gives away that there is a party in Six of Crows with white people. That really, Jeff, you know the plot of Six of Crows. That literally gives away nothing. There is so much more that happens in Six of Crows that is more than white people partying.